We will switch gears now and move into the latest episode of Movies on the Radio. Today we consider the many films that featured child actors, and certainly there were plenty of examples of when the kids stole the show. Shirley Temple in lots of films as a child, known for her singing and dancing, and yes, of course, those adorable dimples. Some of today's most famous actors started their careers as children. Natalie Portman and Christian Bale both started acting when they were 12. Film experts Laura Boyce and Marsha Gordon are just 15 and 16 themselves. I don't know if any of our listeners realize
going
that, but
on
you're
17.
We're a precocious tot.
And you're so bright. Laura is the film curator at North Carolina Museum of Art, the youngest ever hired. And Marsha is a film professor at North Carolina State who is still working on a doctorate because she's too young to have it.
That's right.
Otherwise. No, none of that's true. You're young, but the doctorate you have.
I understand.
Why do we love child actors?
That's a great question. I don't think we universally do. I mean, child actors, when they are good, can be the kind of soul and the heart of a picture or great comedy because they're often, they play these roles that are, funnier and wiser and sassier than they should be at their ages. But when they're bad, and they can really drag a film down, and there's almost nothing worse than a bad child actor. So I think it really depends on the situation.
Yeah.
Well, I think they embody the possibility of change, that everyone, you know, is one way as a child, and as you grow up, there's like this fork in the road where you could be one way or another, and children embody that promise.
Well, the first film we're going to talk about is a fork in the road and a pitchfork in her hands. The Demon Seed. This is Bad Seed. Let's take a listen.
This is Jenna Ram. I'm calling from Apex, North Carolina, and the movie I picked is The Bad Seed. The most terrifying movie I think I've ever seen. It scared the holy hell out of me as a child. I was about the same age as the girl in the movie. She's the most perfect, blonde, well-dressed, well-mannered young lady, and all of the adults are completely mesmerized by her and fall in line behind all of her lies and manipulation. And it was the first time I realized that evil could come in a very pretty package.
Get me back my shoes!
I got nobody's shoes. Don't you know anybody's feet in here?
Will you bring them back?
With your puzzle, I got no shoes. I keep telling you.
Will you bring them back?
I believe you did it. I was fooling before, but now I believe you kill him. You kill that little boy with his shoes.
You've got them hid, but you'd better get them and bring them back here. Right ahead of me!
The scariest scene in the movie is when she murders the handyman who she's locked in the basement and lights on fire, and you never actually see the handyman being murdered, but you hear him yelling.
It's too late.
Somebody call an ambulance.
He's lying still.
Whatever can be done will be done.
I should have known that this was going to happen now. I should have known it. How could I be so blind?
Thank God, Rhoda.
You see, now the fire was in the basement where it really was. There's nothing we can do.
Murder on the Radio today with Bad Seed. Wow, what a film.
This is a good one.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the baby boom goes terribly wrong. And this actress, Patty McCormick, as little Rhoda, she's horrific. And it's such a wonderful, fun thing to see in the context of the 1950s. We have such a different notion of what the 1950s kind of post-war culture was like. And to see this truly demonic child who's so manipulative and so cruel. It is a very haunting film.
It's a nature-nurture argument, too, because she's adopted and it's discovered that she's the child of a serial killer. So there's no way that you can mother her into being a good seed.
And then the whole white picket fence atmosphere, I mean, the universe they create in which this girl lives is really kind of profound. It's funny in a way because it was criticized even at the time. I think the contemporary reviews thought it was just still a little bit, sort of over the top and a little in the way it presented some of these issues.
But when you're watching it, you don't feel
it. It's amazing how well it works, knowing darn well that I shouldn't like this. I shouldn't be believing this, right?
Well, and when her own mother tries to kind of dispense with her and fails. I mean, it's worth a watch.
Well, there's lots more today. We're talking about movies and movies on there. And actually, I think we should go back. I've got a second here to talk a little bit about child actors, because I mentioned Shirley Temple, but really we go back even before that.
Yes, right? Into the silent era. There was first Baby Peggy, now the oldest living silent film actress at nearly 100 years old. Jackie Coogan, who was in The Kid with Charlie Chaplin. His parents stole all his money the way Baby Peggy's did as well. And a law was made to keep parents from taking the income of their children, but there's always a way around that.
And of course, there's lots of trajectories for child performers, and Baby Peggy is, I think, a special example. Laura brought her, Diana Sarah Carey, in 2006 to the North Carolina Museum of Art, so I had the opportunity to meet and interview her, and to hear her talk about her workaday, difficult kind of years as a child actress, and then her family pulled her out and put her on the vaudeville circuit and then made her come back in her teens in the 1930s to try to make more money for the family. And she was no longer the cute little kid actor, and now she was an actress who was just kind of struggling and on the outside, and she ended up leaving Hollywood being very disillusioned with it. So that is not always the case, but there's a lot of tragic stories about
We'll talk more about
actors.
That. Yeah, about the children who made the leap and the others who didn't, and all of that is part of our conversation today. Kids in the Movies, Movies on the Radio on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. There's more to come. This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Movies on the Radio today are theme films featuring child actors, from Shirley Temple to Quvenzhané Wallace. We are talking about your favorite child stars. Laura Boies and Marcia Gordon. Laura, film curator at the North Carolina Museum of Art. Marcia is film professor at NC State. And we're going to listen to a film now with two child stars, one of whom had grown up by the time this film had been made, the other still a child.
This is Kathy Zinn calling from Pittsburgh. And my pick for a movie featuring a child actor is Meet Me in St. Louis from 1944, with Margaret O'Brien playing the youngest of four children in an upper-middle-class family in St. Louis. They are on the brink of moving in 1904 from St. Louis to New York, and little Margaret is very devastated. She has a range of emotions that she plays in this movie. She can be a giggly little girl. She can be frightened. She can be angry. She can be hysterical. Her finest scene, I think, is when at Christmas time her big sister, Judy Garland, is singing Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. And she doesn't say a word throughout the song, but she's totally engaged in the scene and with her big sister. But she's devastated and runs out into the yard, into the snowy yard, and smashes down all of the snow figures that she's made.
Come on, come back in the house. You can't stay home now. Nobody's going to have us. Not if we're going to New York. I'd rather kill them if we can't take them with us.
Judy, darling, don't cry.
It's all right.
Don't cry. You can build other snow people in New York.
No, you can't. You can't do anything like you do in St. Louis.
Oh, no, darling, you're wrong. No, no, New York is a wonderful town.
Kathy's in talking about Meet Me in St. Louis, 1944 film with Judy Garland as the older sister of Margaret O'Brien.
I find this to be a very sad movie. I think it has to do with the fact that it's probably referencing all of the families that were separated during World War II, because it was a big hit in 1944. But that scene that you just played, Margaret O'Brien seems genuinely hysterical. In that scene. It's very upsetting for everyone watching it.
You know, by the way, I was just looking this up. Margaret O'Brien is still making films, if you can believe
that.
She
makes public appearances at her films
all
the time.
It's extraordinary. But she received a special Academy Award for her performance in this film, which was a juvenile award, which the Academy started giving in 1935. Shirley Temple was the first recipient. So it was a category for, I don't know, 20 or so years, because it was hard for these child actors to compete with, grown-up actors.
Well, because the grown-up actors would be mad if they were beaten by Shirley Temple.
Yeah, and they would.
Not only, you pointed out the fact that she really did look insanely angry angry and at that moment. But as Kathy Zinn pointed out, she was also visibly moved by the song. So you were shocked because she was listening to the song and you thought, oh, have yourself a, she's won over. She has melted into the idea. She thoroughly had bought into it. And then the transition was really shocking in the moment.
She's so good.
Good stuff. Hey, let's listen to another pick now. This one is, again, a film that was a bit of a period piece. Let's listen.
This is Keith Brown from Pittsburgh, and the movie that I've chosen is In Search of the Castaways, starring Haley Mills. This is a 1960s Disney movie based on a Jules Verne novel where Haley plays Mary Grant, who is in search of her father, Captain Grant, and recruits Maurice Chevalier, a French professor, to help find him.
You never saw that Frenchman before in your life, did you, until he showed up with the bottle? And yet you believe every word he says.
And no matter what he says, you and your father refuse to believe him.
Suppose I told you that I'd found a bottle with a note in it. Would you believe me?
Well, did you?
Yes.
And what did it say?
It said, disregard first message.
It's just a very enjoyable adventure movie that, since it's Disney, you know will end well.
If there's a complication, enjoy it. You've got imagination, employ it. Then you'll see roses in the snow. Joie de vivre will make them grow, voila. That's life. Enjoy it.
There we go. In Search of the Castaways, 1962.
Well, Haley Mills was a very important part of my childhood with The Parent Trap, Pollyanna, The Moon Spinners. She was
the face of Disney.
Yes.
That's right.
And the fact that she was English at a time when the Beatles were very popular also contributed to her appeal in my eyes.
She also received the last special Juvenile Academy Award for Pollyanna. That was the last one they gave before they got rid of the category. So.
Now, you have to point out that this is 1962 Disney, but I will say their version of the natives that they encountered, pretty disturbing these days. And I'm sure they wouldn't do it these days, but that's one part of this thing that you have to was a little disturbing. Anyway, but apart from that, you know, it's a film made in 1962. Miracle Worker, there's another fine film and one that I think everybody's talking about. Again, 1962, and certainly when that came out, was the talk of the town.
My name is Marianne Wegner, and I'm from Hurdle Mills, North Carolina, north of Hillsboro. And I chose Patty Duke in The Miracle Worker. I just think that performance stands out, you know, just above all others, that she was, you know, so convincing as being blind and deaf. I mean, she was just completely believable. And then, and also the intensity of the performance.
W-A-T-E-R, water. It has a name. W-A-T.
Miracle Worker, 1962, Patty Duke as Helen Keller and Bancroft as the teacher Ann Sullivan.
Well, I think one of the reasons that Patty Duke must have been so convincing as Helen Keller in the film is that she had basically 2 years of rehearsal playing her on Broadway before she made the film. And then, interestingly enough, in the 1970s, did a made-for-TV version of the movie in which she plays the Annie Sullivan role. So she spent a lot of her career with Helen Keller and with this story.
This was a movie I found really fascinating when I was a kid because of the violence of her rebellion And the strength of the parental figure played by Anne Bancroft just really, it was like a lightning bolt for me watching it.
Certainly, powerful performance. I will say, though, as a 9-year-old boy, my problem with the movie was the way it reinforced the power of tough love, because I, you know, required a fair amount of discipline. And now it was like, oh, you see, if you just hold them accountable, the boy will grow up just fine. I got the scars to prove it. So that's my only, that's my only pushback on the movie.
Did not work with a bad scene, though.
Didn't work with me, actually, but that's another question. Hey, here's a film that I just personally discovered by accident, one on late night TV, because it had been out for a long time, and fell in love with it. Here we go.
Hi, my name is Joshua Glick. I'm calling from Little Rock, Arkansas. And my favorite film featuring a child actor is called Thousand Clowns, 1965, set in New York City, starring Jason Robards playing character Murray Burns, who is an unemployed television show writer and is struggling to keep custody of his nephew, Nick, played by Barry Gordon. And the film is really about their relationship. Nick is sort of helping his uncle to grow up, to get a job, but also is trying to keep him grounded and youthful.
You know, Murray, you don't want a job is the whole thing.
You just concentrate on being a child because I find your imitation of an adult hopelessly inadequate.
Well, you want to be your own boss, Murray, but the trouble with that is you don't pay yourself anything. You don't pay yourself anything. Hey, that's a good line. I gotta remember that.
You ever considered being the first 12-year-old boy in space?
Murray, I am upset. Now, for me as an actual child, the way you live in this house and we live is a dangerous thing for my later life when I become an actual person. Now, an unemployed person like you are for so many months is bad for you as the person involved, and it's definitely bad for me, who we live in the same house where the rent isn't paid up for months sometimes. And I wish you'd get a job, Murray.
He is a wise adolescent, a wise child, really, in a world full of immature adults.
The 1965 film, A Thousand Clowns.
When a child has to parent an adult, it's in a way kind of a sad situation, but the wisecracking New York humor really helps it go down a lot more easily.
Yeah, and in the movies, this idea of flipping, you know, who's the more mature, the adult or the child. I mean, that's a kind of a convention that has been played out in many scenarios. I mean, think about any Wes Anderson film, for example, where the kids have these adult qualities and the adults have these childlike qualities. That's just a recent example. But this is a formula.
And it's very much kind of a late 50s, early 60s film, very much set in New York in a period piece for that reason, because the Jason Robards character, Murray, in this case, is not just a slacker. He's got an ideology. It's the world is the man, you know, and he's pushing back against Madison Avenue and everybody who would constrain his youthful freedom. So he's got this kind of Murray himself. I mean, there's something a little bit attractive about his point of view, but ultimately the film points him out to be pretty much a selfish, narcissistic character. But there are a few moments where you say, yeah, you know what? It's not so bad to be free.
The anti-MAME thing where you look up at an adult that seems unconventional and then you idolize them until you see what the limitations of that role are.
And you can often see that, I mean, through the eyes of a child character where they're perspective on that immaturity or that lack of connection to the adult world is really different than the adults who look around and see someone who's, you know, a freak in their eyes.
Well, there's another example of that, I think, in some ways in our next film.
Hi, my name is David Webb, and I'm calling from Aden. And my movie this month was Paper Moon. It goes back to the early 1970s and starred Tatum O'Neill opposite her father, Ryan O'Neill. Tatum O'Neill played this part so incredibly well. The music of the movie is fantastic. The use of black and white cinematography, all of that was good. Finally, it culminates where she is reunited with her blood relatives because Ryan O'Neill never owned up to being her dad. And finally, she realized she was going to miss Ryan too much. And as he was sitting there waiting for a broken down old truck to revive, he saw her coming up and says, "You can't go with me." Which she just looked at him and says,
"I want my money. You took my $200.
Will you quiet down? You hear?
I want my $200.
Hold on. Just hold on.
Let me explain something to you.
It ain't as if you was my pa, that'd be different.
Well, I ain't your pa, so just get that out of your head. I don't care what those neighbor ladies said.
I look like
you. You don't look nothing like me. You don't look any more like me than you do that Coney Island. Eat that damn thing, you hear?
We got the same jaw.
Lots of people got the same jaw.
It's possible.
No, no, it ain't possible.
You met my mom in a barroom.
For God's sakes, child. You think everybody gets met in a barroom gets a baby?
It's possible.
Anything is possible, but possible don't make it true.
And I want my money.
Will you quiet down?
1973 film, Paper Moon.
This is one of the all-time great child performances. The rapport between Tatum O'Neill and her father, Ryan O'Neill, is just spectacular. Tatum O'Neill, however, had one of the most unhappy lives of any child actor. And in fact, when she became the youngest performer ever to win a competitive Oscar, neither of her parents could get it together to even attend the Oscar ceremony with her. Hmm. And she came alone.
And this was her first film role, I
believe. Yes.
And I really remember her, too, then a year after in Bad News Bears, which was a film that I loved. And so she had this kind of burst of amazing roles in the start of her career.
But she struggled with addiction all of her life. She had a really sad childhood. And this picture is like such an amazing shining star, you know, that shows her at such an amazing moment.
Well, we think about the other stars that have had similar stories. Judy Garland comes to mind immediately, right? Of someone who, again, is the family life is in tatters. She's doing something to prove something, and as a result, becomes a genius, a cinematic genius. And yet, what a terrible life.
Well, and in her period of time, too, the studio system, you know, basically owned their performers as property. And so what she had to do in order to maintain her weight and to fit into all these roles was just, I mean, it was perverse by any metric.
This takes us now to the Natalie Portman Christian Bale portion of our program. let's listen to the first bit.
Hi, this is Steve Gallup from Cary, North Carolina. I picked Leon the Professional. It's an old movie, but I think Natalie Portman gives a really great performance. She plays a girl whose family is killed early on by a really over-the-top psychopathic character played by Gary Oldman. And she ends up finding refuge with professional assassin, and that's played by Jean Reno, who's a French actor. In the course of the film, they end up developing a really close relationship.
I have this great game. It makes you think and it helps your memory. It's exactly what you need.
Okay.
Kelly?
Good. Your turn now.
Huh? Okay, Pilgrim.
Clint Eastwood?
The 1994 movie Leon the Professional, starring a 12-year-old Natalie Portman.
Yeah, who looks just like her adult self. I mean, it's kind of, she's one of these performers who just stayed the same and just got older. But this is a film about an unlikely alliance between an adult and a child, just like Paper Moon. So this is kind of another trope of dealing with child performers. And as is the idea of children who are in a cruel world and have to do things to survive that are not in keeping with their age. I also think about a role like this, like its relationship to something like Jodie Foster in Taxi Driver, who was like 14. And so there's a number of these films, especially in the 80s and 90s.
Having to grow up too fast.
And do you think it, because the literary, it seems to me, analogy would be Angela's Ashes, again, where the genius of the film is allowing it to stay in the child's voice. So what would be a horror to you as an adult from the perspective of the child, and if we buy the child's performance, it makes perfect sense. There's a certain amount of logic in sort of befriending.
Because a child accepts the world that they live in as the only option, which is adults see that there are other options, but children don't.
Yeah, and the genius is somehow encouraging a child to develop a performance that keeps them as a child, but having to, you know, do the work of an actor, right? Mm-hmm. You have to know mm-hmm. the script. You have to act. You know?
Well, and in a number of these cases of acting older than they are, even right. in terms of the way that they have to navigate the world.
These children are all acting. They're not just being photographed in their natural behaviors. Right. They are professional actors.
Right, memorizing lines and, you know, doing all that stuff.
Well, we're going to talk more about that and some of the toll that it's taken, too. We'll continue our conversation on the state of things when we look at child actors, your picks, the picks of our guests, Marcia Gordon and Laura Boys. Movies on the Radio, more just ahead. Stay with us. This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow with Marcia Gordon and Laura Boys. Movies on the Radio today, child actors. And we just heard from Natalie Portman, who made the leap from a child actor to an adult. Christian Bale is another of the best-known actors today who started his career when he was 12.
Hi, I'm Ted. I live north of Eno in Durham County. And my movie for child actors is Empire of the Sun, directed by Steven Spielberg. It's a 1987 movie, I believe. This the first movie of Christian Bale's appearance on the stage, so to speak. I believe Steven's wife at the time, Amy Irvin, first discovered Christian at a play in London and suggested if ever he has the opportunity to cast him in a movie, please consider him. And once you see this movie, you'll understand why she was so enamored with him. He's probably 12, 13 years old at the time. But the movie Empire of the Sun does depict the Japanese occupation of, I believe, Shanghai. And Christian is a part of an English family who's in an enclave in Shanghai who's trying to evacuate before the Japanese run through town. And unfortunately, they get separated in the mob during the evacuation. But there are so many emotional scenes in this movie. Up and down roller coaster of emotions, from the lowest of lows to the highest of highs.
Hey, come back to the hospital! I need some help with the hospital!
Dr. Rollins, do you remember how we helped to build the runway? If we died like the others, our bones would be in the runway! In a way, it's our runway!
No, it's their runway, Jim! Try not to think so much. Try not to think so much!
I can't remember what my parents looked like.
That's the 1987 movie Empire of the Sun, starring Christian Bale.
He's been in so many movies as a kid and as a teen, and Newsies and Swing Kids, where he plays this jazz-loving Munich teen who becomes a Nazi, and then to go on to be the Batman. I mean, it's pretty astonishing, really.
And in this role, I mean, this is one of those youthful resilience and survival roles. That's, I mean, it's a really powerful, well-acted, especially, again, for like someone who's 12, 13, trying to deal with these really complicated emotions and ideas.
We had a lot of selections. French films seem to, a number of French films involving children. The one we selected was Ponette.
My name is Marion Fragola. I'm calling from Raleigh, North Carolina, and I would like to talk about Victoire Thivissol, who played a character named Ponette in the 1996 film called Ponette. She was 5 years old at the time, and she is playing a little girl whose mother dies in a car accident. So when the film starts, her mother has already passed away, though she doesn't know it. And very early in the film, she learns that her mother has died. Her father sort of unceremoniously tells her that her mother has died. And she is just this absolutely remarkable little spirit in this movie. I can't quite believe that the director got this performance out of her, and I don't know how she managed to do it because she's so young, and yet the qualities of her performance are just so beautiful and intricate and heartfelt, and her little face is so perfect, and her little page boy haircut, and even the clothes that they put her in these gorgeous chunky sweaters and overalls, and she's just the most captivating little presence, and she just owns every single frame of the film.
Ponette, not a story about the morning of death.
Personne revient de la mort. Je suis plus qu'un ami. Je suis la fille de ma maman.
But about the celebration of life.
from the trailer of the 1996 French film Ponette.
Well, when I hear about Ponette, I can't help but thinking of my favorite male equivalent of the non-American film kid, which is Bruno from Bicycle Thief, who is the most adorable child. This is the Vittorio De Sica film from 1948, and it just, what he goes through and his performance and his love for his father and these kind of survival things, it's just, I mean, he's the heart and soul of that film.
And a lot of people love this film, too.
This is a much-loved film. Yeah.
Your choice, Laura, is the film called About a Boy.
Yes, it stars Hugh Grant and Nicholas Hoult. It's based on a novel by Nick Hornby, and it's about a character played by Hugh Grant who's independently wealthy because of a novelty song that his father wrote. And he's a very selfish person, and this boy forces him to engage with the world, and then he realizes the limitations of his own selfishness.
Let's listen.
You don't have a kid, do you?
What?
You don't have a kid, do you?
Of course I've got a kid. What are you on about?
No, you don't. I've been watching you and you don't have a kid.
Well, what is it to you anyway?
Nothing, except you've been lying to me, my mum and my mum's friend. Can I come in?
No.
Why?
Because I'm busy.
What are you doing?
I'm watching TV.
I can watch it with you if you like.
Well, that's very nice of you, Marcus, but I usually manage on my own, thanks. Well, don't you have homework to do or something?
Yeah. Do you want to help me?
No, that's not what I meant. I meant, why don't you go home and do your homework?
I'll do you a deal. I won't tell anyone you don't have a kid if you go out with my mum.
Why would you want your mum to go out with someone like me?
I don't think you're too bad. I mean, I told lies, but apart from that, you seem okay. And she's sad. I think she'd like a boyfriend.
Well, you know, I can't just go out with someone because you want me to, Marcus. I would actually have to like the person as well.
What's wrong with her?
Well, there's nothing wrong with her. That's just the system. That's how it... For Christ's sake, I'm not talking about this with you. Just go.
Okay, but I'll be back.
Here we go. About a Boy, 2002. Laura Boy's pick on.
And Hugh Grant said that he didn't particularly like children, so he could really sort of get into this whole role. And that he also got very bored when he was filming it after the rehearsals, and that Nicholas Hoult could improvise in character no matter what Hugh Grant said on camera, which is also a very remarkable skill for someone who's so young.
And yeah. For those of you who have seen Mad Max Fury Road, Nicholas Hoult plays Nux. And
isn't it a lovely day?
A great, great performance. So this is someone who has, I would say, gotten better with time.
Better with time.
Okay, guess who the WUNC employee is who is also a child actor?
You?
No.
I don't know.
Rusty Jacobs.
Really?
Rusty was in Taps, Once Upon a Time in America. Yeah.
What?
He had a promising career and then blew it all in public radio.
Wow. That was a bad decision, if you don't mind my
saying. Hugely bad decision.
It was the money that swayed him.
It was the money.
It was.
Finally, it was the money and the benefits that did it. yeah. Rusty. Rusty was a child actor.
Had some
pretty cool roles. Let's talk about Westerns here for the moment, which there are a lot of them. We'll talk about a couple of them. Lots of them with the kids, you know. I used to watch a TV show called The Rifleman. Remember mm-hmm. that one?
Yes,
yeah,
indeed.
It had that same theme. But let's talk about this one, True Grit.
My name is Katrina Dixon, and I am calling from Lexington, Kentucky. I chose to talk about specifically Hailee Steinfeld's role as Maddie Ross in the Coen Brothers remake of True Grit.
I'm Maddie Ross. Daughter of Frank Ross.
Oh. Tragic thing. May I say, your father impressed me with his manly qualities. He was a close trader, but he acted the gentleman.
Well, I propose to sell those ponies back to you that my father bought. And I want $300 for Papa's saddle horse that was stolen from your stable.
You have to take that up with a man who stole a horse.
Tom Chaney stole the horse while it was in your care. You are responsible.
Yeah, I admire your sand, but I believe you will find I'm not liable for such claims.
You were the custodian. If you were a bank ever robbed, you could not simply tell the depositors to go hang.
I do not entertain hypotheticals. The world as it is vexing enough. Secondly, your valuation of the horse is high by about $200. How old are you?
If anything, my price is low. Why, Judy is a fine racing mare. I've seen her jump an 8-rail fence with the heavy rider. I'm 14.
The way she grows over time and the way we get to see her in the end of the film as like this older woman, you get this beautiful scene of her walking away from Cogburn's grave, which she has moved to her family's plot. And it's this, you know, one-armed woman silhouette walking into the horizon, and the Iris Dement comes on. And it's just I think a really powerful role for girls and women everywhere.
I'm talking about the Coen Brothers' 2010 remake of True Grit.
Well, this is the rare remake where both versions are truly worth watching for different reasons. The 1960s version had John Wayne and Kim Darby, who played the role that Hailee Steinfeld plays.
But who was much older than...
Who was older, yeah. Yes. But they're both very interesting films about a very strong girl character.
And Hailee Steinfeld, I mean, the character is so self-possessed, but the performance has such... kind of power to it for someone who's, I don't know, 14 or something that.
Very, very mature. And you picked Shane, Marcia.
I did, but Shane. I need to clarify.
You
this
better.
Is not because this is my favorite child performance. So I'm teaching a class at NC State this semester on gangsters, cowboys, and superheroes. And so I just taught this to my students and had the experience of watching this film with young people who could not tolerate this performance. About 10 minutes into the film, every time the Joey character, played by Brandon DeWilde, came on screen and said his lines and was looking so lovingly at Shane, I mean, they just would laugh and snicker. I mean, he ruined the film for them. And
it's interesting.
And it's a very different reception than when the film came out in the 1950s. This performance was nominated for a Best Supporting Actor award. Bosley Crowther in the New York Times said it was amazing. Audience loves this kid because he sees the world. You get to see all the violence and all these things through his eyes. But it's so creaky today, and it's hard for them to stomach. And frankly, I think it's a little hard for me to stomach.
Yeah, because they started rolling their eyes 4 or 5 minutes in. 90 minutes later,
yes.
This is how it ended.
I've got things for you to do, and Mother wants you. I know she does. Shane!
Even have the echo,
effect.
I object
to the really crappy echo.
It is a little bit unusual to have a child so much at the heart of a Western, and this case, it's a difficult.
Well, that's the way the book was written. The book was written in first person from the boy's point of view,
and the film is shot that way, respectfully
yes.
of that.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on.
My name is Vanessa Haygood, and I'm from Greensboro, North Carolina. And my favorite movie in this category is Beasts of the Southern Wild. And the reason that I love this movie so much has to do with the star, Quvenzhané Willis. This young lady portrayed to me such strength, such determination, such ingenuity, and such love for her family and her home place, that I couldn't help but identify with her to some extent. I think my favorite scene was probably the most dangerous one, where she used a blowtorch to cook dinner. But it spoke to me about a determination to take what she had and move forward to continue living her life.
The whole universe depends on everything fitting together just right. If one piece busts, even the smallest piece, the entire universe would get busted. In a million years, when kids go to school, they're gonna know. Once there was a hush puppy, and she lived with her daddy in the bathtub.
Who the man?
I'm the man.
Talking about Beast of the Southern Wild, a 2012 film, and one that was had a child actress nominated for an Academy Award.
Yes, not only the first African-American child actor, but also the first person born in the 21st century to be nominated for an Oscar.
And this is another one of those kids who live in kind of difficult, challenging circumstances and who are survivors. And by dint of their own kind of steely will, and this performance, I think, was probably the most important thing about the film.
I agree. A very beautiful, poetic, unusual film.
We haven't talked about sort of who made the cut, who made the leap, and who didn't, and why. We talk about, you know, actresses like Judy Garland, who had a very difficult time moving on, other actors who never made it to the big time. Is there, you know, a formula? Is there a rule who makes it and who doesn't?
Absolutely not.
Yeah. If there is, I don't know it.
I mean, someone like Drew Barrymore, who was such a big star at such a young age and then struggled so much and it seemed like her career had been derailed and then she fooled. I mean, the same thing with Robert Downey Jr.
Right.
Know? So some people make it through and some people don't. It's no different in life than it is in the movies.
Have we figured out what we're going to talk about next time?
I think we have. I think we're talking about strong female roles.
Strong female roles next time.
It's a timely subject.
We need more and more of them.
But there are also a lot of them behind us. So it's a time to reflect on the strong women, female performances that have preceded today.
Yeah, and especially because there are a lot of those performances that occurred at a time when, you know, when we weren't talking about the ascendancy of women or even the equality of women. And so when those roles show up, even more significant, and then we'll talk about the transformation in these times. So strong women roles, strong female characters, you can, not just a leading lady, but strong characters, SOT@WNC.org, or you can tweet at us at #SOTMovie, and of course, always find out more at stateofthings.org. Always a pleasure. Laura, Marcia, thank you so
much. Likewise, I'm sure.
Thank you so much.
And thank you for listening to The State of Things, a program produced by Anita Rao, Laura Pelliser, Robert Kinlaw, Angie Perrin, and Amanda Magnus. Robin Copley is our technical director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.